Welcome to Senior Spotlight number 13. This is Mary Cordova with Concierge Care Advisors, and I'm here with two of our doctors from our Senior Advisor Board, Dr. Ferris and Dr. DeMorais. Thank you for coming, gentlemen, again.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys. We made it.
Yes.
Happy 2025.
2025.
That seems weird to say, but we're here.
Y2K and a quarter.
Yeah. There you go. So, we're going to talk today about resolutions, and we all know that a lot of people make New Year resolutions. Some keep them, some don't. They say statistically at the gym, most people that sign up for the resolution aren't even there until the end of February, if you can believe that. I don't want to be one of those people. I just signed up about 5 days ago. Awesome. So I'm going to be committed to doing it year round. So I just wanted to open the floor and thank you guys so much for coming today. And you guys have so much to offer us to talk to us about being healthy, what that looks like on the cardiovascular side, on a physician side, how that can help us with our brains, our activity, and just being more social and living in the moment. So I'd like to just open the floor. You both have shared with me in the past about just doing more than you did last week or more today, maybe not looking at it as being a rigid exercise, but just being more active. So if you guys can both talk a little bit about being more active and how that helps the brain health, that would be great. Let's start with you, Dr. Ferris.
Okay. Well, I think we could talk about this all day into next week. And I think staying physically active is key. And I think no matter what perspective you look at it, whether the lens is cognitive, I think whether it's behavioral, I think whether you look at it in any other part of the body, it's key. The one place it may not be king or queen would be necessarily weight loss, because you do need to look at nutrition, or really specifically your calories, right? But I think central is staying physically active. And I've really gotten away from using the word exercise for years, because I think that's not the solution. I don't think that's the wrong answer. I think that in kind of the big picture, we as a Homo sapien being, a mammal, we've survived inclusive of being by necessity physically active. But that's changed in really post-industrial civilization, and we don't have that. And so the challenge is that we're really swimming against the tide or swimming against the current, so it's hard to do. So the gym is great, but there's really not enough gyms for everybody, right? So how do you integrate it into everyday life? So some of the things I've played with clinically over the years is talking to patients about game theory, or just an approach that every little thing you can do to stay physically active is going to matter. And then we can talk about the health impact later. And there's been studies that have measured even a few minutes, it makes a measurable difference. Now, that's a great thing, but it's also a tough thing to swallow, because it kind of shows how far we may have slid back the progress curve that exists out there. But by eliminating whatever mental stereotype of what is exercise into, no, just stay physically active.
Right.
And there's probably an even better word, I think, is more meaningful and impactful, even down to what Concierge Care Advisors is going to do when inevitably we all get older.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I shared with you guys off camera that you have always looked at this as just getting out and doing more than you did yesterday or last week, and not always looking at it as the exercise piece. And I love that. I took that to heart. And I think for a lot of elderly people, they get defeated by thinking they're gonna have to diet or they're gonna exercise, and they get overwhelmed. Where maybe just making some healthier choices and getting out and walking around the block or walking to the mailbox is better than they did last week.
That's right. And now you don't even have to check your mail, because you can check it via your laptop or tablet. And I think that's that's really the central problem, is our accomplishments have created convenience,
mm-hmm.
but that's not necessarily sedentary. Good for the body.
Absolutely.
Right? It promotes a sedentary lifestyle.
Yes.
So it really requires, almost at a societal level, shift in thinking to turn the ship around in terms of looking at it from the big picture, but also the individual level of, mm-hmm. what can I do for me? Well, I can just be more physically active, whether that's, I'm going to take the stairs instead of the elevator.
Right, right. Yeah, making
right.
those better decisions.
I'm just
going to
park the car, then drive around,
mm-hmm.
looking for the closest spot.
Exactly. Get
right.
that exercise every chance.
I mean,
to
each one's own in terms of what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big part of the paradigm we're dealing with.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Dr. DeMoraes, what do you have to add?
I think, Brian nailed a lot of it. And we were talking earlier, because I have a concierge-based practice. And it's interesting, because we were talking about, how my medical practice differs than when I practiced traditionally. And it's interesting, because many times as physicians, we're putting out fires, because when people come to us, they already have something happening.
Right, right.
And, if we could focus on prevention, it would really change the game on how quality of life improves. I may not be able to make you live longer, but at least I can give you better quality of life while you're alive and vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with, for me, it starts with just a basic conversation of what drives you, what are your goals, what are the things that you do not like doing? Because if I try to get you to swim and you don't like water, it's never going to happen.
Right, right.
But if I can
get that buy-in.
I can entice you to change a little bit of your activity, like you were mentioning, park farther, take the
right,
stairs if
right.
you can. You may not be able to. If you look at the basic concept of walking in itself is an amazing exercise,
mm-hmm.
if that's all you start with.
Mm-hmm.
So I have people shoot for either a 20 or 30 minute goal. And, walking the same block, it's boring. So
right.
I tell them, walk 15 minutes one way and then walk 15 minutes back. And
right.
if you think you can't make it 30 minutes, then walk 10 and
10.
And if you can
yeah.
go an extra 5 and 5, then you're not away from your home and your safety board.
Wonderful.
But, when we were talking earlier, I think concierge medicine should be called targeted medicine, because I'm targeting a better health pathway and a better lifestyle to each individual that comes to see me,
right?
Because each person is completely different.
Absolutely.
And I'm working with individual experiences, individual ideas, individual capabilities and abilities, individual health issues. And if you can't mold a self-driven exercise program that you can support, typically you're set to failure as a physician. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So having them engaged and involved makes a big difference. If we could all have a personal
trainer,
we would all exercise, because first of all, we have to be there.
Absolutely.
And we're paying
you have that
for
commitment.
It.
Yep. Yeah.
You
have that money going
it.
Out. Yeah.
But then they can alter
accountability.
Their exercise program around you
right.
to be successful.
But I think, though, that the basic principles that you touched on, especially from the standpoint of the physician's practice. When we were in med school, I'm sensing this is a generational change in terms. We talked about quantity of life versus quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
We also talked about wants and needs. What is that? What does your patient want versus what do they need? Well,
mm-hmm.
they need to be more active. They want a balance, their vision of balance of quantity of life or quality of life, or they want you to fix something. And now I hear less of that versus we talk about targeted medicine or individualized medicine. Well, ultimately, it's really the same thing, is how do we get a sense of what that information is when everybody's pressured for time, whether it's the current health system 2.0 in terms of all the things that they're under pressure for, in all due respect,
mm-hmm.
to those who can have more time or those who don't. How do we get to them to have more time? And in my career, I feel like I've seen it march upstream to even the pre-medical level of what can be done that's going to have a positive impact on their overall health system, and is or health status, that's really a benefit for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The other thing too is, you know, as a family practice physician, I can treat your ailments and I can give you guidance to improve your health, but only you really can make you better.
Right.
Is the reality.
Gotta get that buy-in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm a true believer that we all have a genetic makeup and we can only live so long. I think we're pushing the envelope of what historically we all have lived, but that comes with some aches and pains and elements unless we really get engaged in physical activity. And for me, label advanced age, elderly, geriatric care, whatever you may call it, majority of the people that I care for that do well and are still vertical to this day, and they exercise on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that's a big game changer.
Keep a component, absolutely.
And we can back that up with data. I mean, we have several natural life studies, and I first think of and have quoted regularly the Nurses' Health Study, which was thousands of nurses followed for a long, long period of time, and it was very clear. But profound that even modest changes of what the nurses ate, but also what that physical activity was modestly, had tremendous payoffs by the time, and we're talking about when it was done by 50 years of age, and then fast forward two decades later, the difference was clear.
Profound.
Couldn't have been more clear.
Yeah. Interesting.
And no matter how you start looking at physical activity, particularly the earlier it is, the outcome, and I think from the health professional perspective, whether you're looking at it from a public health perspective, a populational health perspective, or the individual, is what matters to the patient, the individual. How am I going to do? Not so much with that illness or that illness. No, what's the big picture? So we call that all-cause mortality. The one thing that matters the most is staying physically active. And we can measure that. And we can measure that now in ways that are more accessible, maybe not perfectly accurate, than ever before, mm-hmm. right? You can do it with smart rings and watches
right.
and all kinds of devices that are now available to the individual. You don't need to go to a specialized lab. You can start seeing that. And if that helps motivate, that's great. It's absolutely fantastic because you can see it, you can measure it. So that may be a tool to start trying to swim against the tide or the current rather effectively.
Absolutely. And we do know that once someone loses their mobility to be able to walk, it's really hard for them to stay home long term. Right? So whether it's a fall or someone's not able to get up and move themselves, you know, their wife obviously now is susceptible to moving them. And, you know, that's really difficult. So getting people up and moving is absolutely key and paramount for staying independent at home.
Well, I would submit, and I think Alex can comment on this, that even when somebody has reached that threshold, that even the same interventions can still help stabilize the course that they're on.
Right.
And whether they can no longer be in their own home or not, if you can make the next step of their life better, right. safer, I think it's a win-win for everybody because it could impart quality on the individual. It can impart safety on the facility because they're not as worried about
falls and
injury,
mm-hmm.
right? Or medical decompensation or whatnot. So I'm a big believer, but it's how we do it that I think is the key. It's not a boot camp.
Right. And it's
that.
Different for everyone, obviously. Right. And I think you guys both mentioned quality versus the quantity of how long we're going to be here.
Right. And I think the new term for that is health span.
Health span.
But,
yeah.
But it's quantity of life versus quality of life. And you and I were talking about this the other day, that there's a book that came out in the mid 90s by a cardiac, I think he was a cardiac surgeon named Sherwin Nuland. And it was a bestseller. And it was a very profound title, big black and white letter covering how we die.
Mm.
And I had the privilege of hearing his commencement address when I graduated medical school. And I had read the book, and the reality is that most of us want to be here and then be gone. But the truth is that that's not what happens.
Right.
It happens in phases, or to be even more banal, in pieces. And that's the hard part. And I think we don't address, I think we could do a better job, not only as from the health system perspective, but even from a social perspective, of recognizing that. That in turn can be somewhat motivating to say, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to hold it together as long as I can. Well, how are you going to do that? Oh, well, you're going to stay physically active, right? Think about what you're going to eat better. Those are going to have profound impacts.
Absolutely. I come from a family of diabetes. My dad lost a leg. And when he decided to come off kidney dialysis, he was in fear of losing his second leg.
Sure.
It had gone gangrene already. But he was still working, only at 76 years old. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. When we reflect on that, it's like talking to my sisters. It's like, you know, do you really want to lose a limb? So I think history, your genes have a lot to do with it. And then also just looking at other people's morbidity and their passing, and then not wanting to follow that as well.
But I think also that we're getting to the point of technical sophistication where we can say, we can turn that on its head,
mm-hmm.
and say, your genes in this environment are doing blank. And in some ways that's a little less morbid and a little less fatalistic, because then you can say, this is who I am.
Right.
And this is what these influences. It's not that it's wrong with me. It's that this interface is affecting me in this way. It's a little bit more neutral. It's a little bit more palatable,
right,
in my opinion.
Right.
Because you could easily then say, look, this lifestyle is affecting your metabolic makeup based on your genetic profile in the following way, and this is how we can influence it by choices, right? And hopefully you're from a social perspective able to have opportunity, because I don't think everybody does make those changes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Education's a big key to this too, because we don't, you know, when you're 20, you don't think about 70 or 80.
Right.
And when you're 30, you know, you're like, okay, I'm 30 now. And then the next thing you know, you're like, I'm 60, right? And I've taken care of patients through the spectrum of life from birth to 107 years old is my oldest patient. And I've seen what it's like to be in great nursing homes, and I've seen what it's been like to be in not so great nursing homes where you don't have the capability to guide your health care because your health has personally declined. You know, and I try to sell to a lot of people, your lifespan is like your retirement account. If you invest in it early, you're going to have a much better retirement, because we work and then all of a sudden we're disabled and
right.
we can't enjoy what we've
worked
invested
all those years for.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it takes very little investment to, when you're early, just like in the true financial investment, right? If you can invest $500 a year, $300 a year, $200 a year, that grows over 40, 50, 60 years, and exercise is the same process.
Same way.
You don't have
Absolutely.
To do a lot.
Right.
Muscle mass is big. A good way that I use, the pathway that I use to convince people who are at a fall risk is I ask them, are you open to doing balanced physical therapy for a month? We'll do an assessment on you, and then when you come back, let's talk to see if it was worth it. And if
right.
it wasn't worth it, I won't bother you anymore.
Perfect.
And it's amazing how many people say, you know what, I've noticed that I can get up out of a chair easier.
It was so worth it. Yeah.
I'm less of a fall risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then another big one, just to intervene here, Parkinson's. I've begun to see more Parkinson's than I've ever seen in my entire career, and especially where I live in Napa. It's a small community, but it's present, you know. And I've talked to my colleagues, and my question is, have you ever seen this much Parkinson's before? And the answer's been no, and we don't know why. It might just be that we're measuring it differently. But people who will come to me and I tell them, have you tried boxing? And they'll be like, I can barely walk. Why should I go try boxing?
That balance.
And it's amazing how the boxing just changes their whole dynamics. It Absolutely. Changes their mental state on yeah. what they can do. It decreases their fall risks. They're now engaged socially because they're yeah. in an environment with other people. Like-minded yeah, people who support them. And they flourish. They yeah. they do better. Unfortunately, their disease state will continue,
right.
but instead of having that constant decline, they now plateau and have a better quality of life until such time as their health changes. And that's a win-win for everybody if you can do that.
Absolutely. I wonder if the Parkinson's is was it being misdiagnosed prior to this, or you know, being seen as something else?
I think, well, a couple of things. We're much more data driven today.
Oh, sure.
We share information more readily.
Mm, so statistically.
You know, before in Napa, I didn't know what was happening in Sacramento or Sonoma.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really connect with your colleagues outside of your office unless you were involved in the hospital environment.
It's kind of siloed.
So the information gathering is different.
Great.
So we're more exposed to it.
Yeah.
And people,
hopefully we can
there's
do
not
something
that
with
fear
that.
Of coming out and saying, you know, I'm having a movement disorder.
Right.
What do I need to do to, number one, determine what it is?
Yep.
And number two, intervene so I can make the best of my life and continue to function as I'm functioning.
Just like health. If you find out early how it benefits you, we can all make changes.
I think we're also seeing the inflection, right, the rapid growth part of the aging population.
Mm.
Just based on the different cross sections of age in the population, we're seeing a lot of older people now. We've all been through a lot of disruption socially with, you know, the human malware virus and how disruptive that's been for people. So I think there's been a lot of changes, but you know, I think it's been predicted that it would be coming, but realizing it and realizing how it's going to impact is really eye opening.
Yeah. You know, for the car analogy, if you run your car longer, you're going to have more things that break on it.
Right, exactly.
And I think we are living longer, and we're seeing some illnesses that historically, like, you know, my lifespan's longer than it would have been 20 years ago. So we would have never, I would have never seen what I'm going to experience when I'm 70, 80, 90.
Right, right.
But now we as physicians and caretakers are noticing that because people are living a little bit past their genetic makeup because
mm-hmm.
of, you know, modern medicine, physical activity and exercise, better eating habits in some individuals. But we're also seeing the disease state in people who, you know, take higher risk activities, maybe don't care for themselves, maybe don't seek medical care when necessary. So
mm-hmm.
we're seeing that difference between those who do and don't and vice versa.
Right.
And I think we could also see the potential for sliding backwards down that improvement curve over the last 70,
yeah.
80 years. I mean, the progress of not struggling to survive, living in a civilization of abundance and convenience,
mm-hmm.
whether it's technological, whether it's medical, whether it's agricultural, whether it's just societal in terms of just transportation, you don't have to do as much. But if you don't lay those early foundations, you could slide back down that curve. And looking through our agenda today, you know, one of the things we talked about when it came to that E word, that exercise word, the reason I don't like it as much is really since the Gym Fix book, in my opinion, since in the 70s, is there was so much cardiac disease. A, we didn't have the tools to deal with it. There were a lot of smokers. It was the number one cause of our mortality. But it became everything about the heart, and that was an important endeavor to go through. But we need to move beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just about getting on the treadmill and revving up the heart. It's there's metabolic, physical, cognitive, cardiac
right.
to maintaining your muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you have more metrics of these age-related illnesses and disorders happening earlier and earlier in life, whether that's because we're more sedentary, whether we're heavier, whatever it is, we for some they risk going sliding back down that curve where it didn't take much, you know, again, in the last few years, to see life expectancy in this country fall.
Mm-hmm.
And despite, you know, the fact we spend more than anybody per capita on healthcare, there's, you know, it's not that the system is bad. They're trying really hard. I mean, there's really good people trying to do really important good things, but it only leads me to the conclusion that foundationally we could do a lot better of what we're doing to ourselves to get there.
Absolutely.
That could make a huge difference. And then looking at those people like your 107-year-old or my 97-year-old or whatever, those who thrive seem to be consistently in that cohort that are, whether it's physically engaged, mentally engaged, or both, are the ones that are
live
the shining
and
examples.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right. And so that's my perspective.
By the way, my 107-year-old was of Greek descent.
Greek, wow.
So
that Mediterranean.
The diet,
yep,
the exercise,
absolutely.
The walk everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what
I love,
right,
it.
He had spent his whole life doing. When you look at historical pictures, it's
wonderful.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Well, we've talked a lot about health and exercise and just being aware of that. And now I would like to talk about how the fitness helps the brain stay young and healthy and aware. And I think talking about some brain exercises, about maybe it's, you know, social engagement, mental stimulation. Talk a little bit about that. And we saw that a lot with COVID, right? When people were isolated for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, their cognition may have declined because they weren't as social, weren't getting out as much, not engaging. And so I think a lot of that brain health also stems by being social and engaging and keeping the brain healthy. So talk a little bit about that.
The boy, the most torturous thing, I think.
Where do you want to start?
I think the most torturous thing you can do to any living being is totally isolate them.
Yes, yes.
If there's enough studies going back through, you know, World War II and World War I that shows what deep isolation does to individuals. And,
yeah,
and we can see it. I've seen it in nursing homes over and over and over again for multiple reasons, and how people thrive in their, not only their mental state, but their physical state changes when they're out of that environment and they're supported, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
People are like flowers. If you nourish them and
they
water
flourish.
Them, they really flourish.
Oh,
and they grow,
do.
You know, irrespective of whether you have normal cognition or whether you have dementia.
Absolutely.
It really doesn't.
The touch, the visit, oh my mm-hmm. gosh, you're mm-hmm. bringing my passion.
And touch therapy is actually a therapy.
Yeah.
You know, for my hospice, we have one of our people that cares for them, and one of the things she does is she does hand massages. She used to be a massage
right.
therapist. And it's interesting how people light up.
Yes.
Or if you do music therapy.
Yes.
So all those things make a big difference in how people, you know, thrive with care and support.
Absolutely.
So it's really neat.
That touch is
yeah,
so important.
I don't even know where to begin to say where does physical activity or exercise or anything that directly engages the brain matters. I think we're learning more. I think that all the variables that have led and continue to lead into this kind of next phase of discovery, whether it's genetics, imaging, physiology, metabolic health, wearable devices, the data that we're going to acquire and the insights are going to be amazing. I think you can begin with that a measure of fitness, or the measure of fitness, is metabolically your VO2. How much oxygen with each breath are you consuming, right? The atmosphere is about 20% oxygen. So with each breath, you're going to use some based metabolically, and you're going to breathe it out, and you're also going to breathe out the carbon dioxide from aerobic metabolism. Well, it used to be you'd have to go to a lab and you'd have to breathe, and you can still do this. You put a mask on and pinch your nose and breathe into the thing while you're on the treadmill or riding the bike or whatever, and you can measure it. Well, there's indirect measures that are trying to assess that, again, through these wearable devices. And when you look at the population in terms of how they do based on that number, those towards the bottom fall off a cliff compared to those towards the top. And that's excluding the elites mm-hmm. on the top,
mm-hmm.
who are the top, right? The small percentage. And that's all cause mortality, which means all cause everything, which means no matter what it is,
right?
Not just cognitive or dementia, but it's everything, including cardiovascular diseases, cancer, neurodegenerative, et cetera, they do better. So it's beyond a shadow of a doubt. And that's where I got to circle back to, but that's a preclinical or a pre-health system thing. I think it should be encouraged and measured and so on and so forth. But I think it's also an individual thing. Now, why does that do that? I think we could get an entire university in each department to weigh in on that, and they're going to have some really interesting things to say.
Sure.
I think from a mental engagement standpoint, you can look at a lot of preclinical things of what excites people, right? Of getting outside. Anything that excites the senses is exciting the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's lighting up different parts
Absolutely.
Of the brain. That's not a bad thing.
Yes.
When you look at how much blood flow does the brain take compared to the rest of the body? How much metabolic consumption does the brain take? It takes a lot compared to everything else. So I've always used the...
Some of us with bigger brains.
take even more, right?
And well, I'm not talking about me.
Well, you know, I think that I've it's kind of funny you say that, because I've kind of used the analogy of the body and the brain is kind of like your engine, right? And if you're born, you may be, you know, whether you want to start with, you're born with the big V12 or the big V8, you know, but you don't want to wither and start losing cylinders and now you're...
Oh, yeah. We all have different mental capabilities. You want to keep them as sharp as
Yeah, it doesn't
as
matter what you have.
Possible.
You want to be firing on all cylinders.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody's
for as long.
Got a purpose.
I mean, not to be stereotypical, but there's a thread of truth in there in terms of, but how do you do that? I think there's a zillion ways to do it, whether you're playing cards with friends,
mm-hmm. right?
You know, whether you're engaging in whatever it is, if you're engaged, it's going to work. It's not that free weights are better than the Nautilus machine. It's that either are better than nothing.
Absolutely.
And we even talked about this earlier. And, you know, they've looked at individuals doing brain games.
Yes.
And they'll do one brain game. Well, they'll get better at that brain game, but the total function of the brain really doesn't improve. So they might be really great at doing that, but you put them back in the regular environment and they still function the same.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you do one thing, you know, introducing a game, while that's helpful,
right,
it doesn't change the overall dynamics of somebody's health. You have to engage in different forms of activities.
Sure, that makes sense.
You know,
so it's a great reason to tell your spouse that you can be involved in lots of different activities.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah. And get away with it. Absolutely.
And get away
with it. I wrote down something that when we were talking about breaths, it's not how many breaths that you take, it's the moments that take your breath away. So that's something I have hanging on my wall.
I get it.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, Brian was talking about VQ quotient. And if you look at, you can look this up anywhere, you know. And people are like, well, I've got to do really this or I've got to do that. If you look at the VQ quotient of walking,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you have to walk at a little bit of a speedy rate, right? But it has one of the best.
Or longer.
Yeah, or longer.
Yeah, longer. Or
it
right.
has one of the best VQ quotients for just survivability, improving quality of life.
Right.
If you're trying to achieve an athletic state, that's different.
Sure, right? Exactly.
But we're talking about what can I do to make my time in this world while I'm vertical better. And walking is one of the most amazing things. You should add some kind of weight exercise in there at least one day a week. It doesn't have to be much, but those two things, and we always get back to the socialization. That's really important. Unless you're a person who doesn't like people, then,
right,
then don't socialize.
Exactly.
Right? But otherwise, it's fabulous.
Perfect. Well, thank you for the recap. I think the one thing we know is do something. Be social. Be active. Get out with your friends. And thank you, gentlemen, for coming to episode 13 of the Senior Spotlight.
Happy New Year.
Health and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It's a great 25.
Yes.